Funding for Think comes from SMU Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How do the chefs of North Texas stack up against one another and their counterparts elsewhere in the U.S., and which local restaurants should be on every food lover's to-do list? As dining critic for D Magazine, Nancy Nichols is perpetually asked which is the best in Dallas. She's asked about Fort Worth sometimes, too, and we will talk about that. In the past, Nancy has tried to dodge the question, but eventually she decided to take it as a sort of challenge, and this month published the results of her painstaking effort to rank the city's best places to eat, including high-end, mid-range, and even a handful of very affordable establishments. Her cover story for the June issue is called The 100 Best Restaurants in Dallas, and we've invited her here to talk about her favorites and what it took to put them in order. Nancy, welcome back to Think.
Thank you, Chris, so much.
So we were talking about this. Are you now the most loved critic in Dallas or the most hated critic in Dallas?
You don't take this job to be loved or to make friends. I'd say there's people talking about me because it gets back to me, but I don't do this for love. I do it for my readers, really. Mm-hmm. I don't think about the restaurant so much. I think about the people who are spending money in restaurants and what I feel are the best places for them to spend their money.
And you say the top 20 are places that you've spent your own out-of-pocket money before.
Mm-hmm. Well, almost all of these restaurants I have. But the top 20 are the places where if I have somebody in town or just want a special occasion for somebody's birthday or anniversary or whatever, those are the places that I use.
So I was really interested that there are, as I mentioned in the introduction, there are really expensive places on this list, and there are places mm-hmm. where you can eat for, $10 or $20. Did you, handicap the lower-priced places to allow them to compete?
I do a lot of best lists, and it's easy to do like the best steakhouses because you're really comparing fillets to fillets.
Right.
And in this case, I'm weighing a baby back rib with a fine dining experience at the mansion. So it empirical methods were not really a part of this. Mm-hmm. Like I said, these are the places where I spend money. So you can kind of see, I don't go out to eat at the mansion every month. Mm-hmm. But yes, there are places that are inexpensive because I think you can have a knockout dining experience for $5 and $500.
So how long did this take you to sort of cull? First of all, you peeled away everything that was a chain, everything that didn't mm-hmm. start here.
Yes.
What allowed a restaurant to be in consideration?
Well, I first I took all of the restaurants in the D Magazine dining directory, which is somewhere between 12 and 1400. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And I did. I tossed out Tarrant County just because you have to start someplace.
Right.
I also. As you mentioned, I cut out restaurants that were not birthed in Dallas. So, for instance, Eddie V's might have been on another best list for something, but they were not on this list because they came from another city, I think Houston. And then I went through each cuisine category and I pulled out my favorites from the cuisine, from Chinese, from German. And then I put them all on a spreadsheet once somebody showed me how to do a spreadsheet. And, I've been doing this for almost a year. Mm-hmm. And I would look at it daily. And I just rotated them, and as my thoughts went along, it was over. At night I would wake up and say, I've got to move that one up. And it was, it's very subjective, I will admit that, but it is the number one question that I do get asked, what's your favorite restaurant? And I just decided to answer it and add 99 more. Why not?
Simple enough, right? So number one on the list, neighborhood services. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you like about it.
Well, I like neighborhood services because I think that Nick Badavinas, the owner and the chef, really hits what I call the D spot. In other words, I think he really grasps what people in Dallas like to eat. As much as many people would like to admit, would like to say that they love tasting menus and they love, you know, modernist cuisine. And I think the great majority of Dallas diners want a nice, what I call an honest meal, a menu that they can read and understand, mm-hmm. know what they're going to get, and have a couple of brilliant seafood options, a couple of brilliant steak options, price point options, homemade pasta. It's about, you know, and I hate to make this comparison, but it's what everybody loves about Houston's. You know, so it's kind of the same dynamic. It's high quality ingredients. You can go in and have a hamburger, which is enough for two people to split, mm-hmm. and a beer and get out of there for $15 a person. Or you can get a $50 steak and a nice bottle of Cabernet. So I think it's real user-friendly and consistently high quality and evolving. And I like that, because if you're a regular, you want to see changes more than just specials. You want to see seasonal changes.
Are there people in other parts of the country who look down on Dallas because we have the, as you call it, the D spot, that we don't want, you know, foams and high concept food?
I think people look down on Dallas because we have this reputation of being a steak town, and we are. Mm-hmm. I mean, just look how many there are. But it's changing thanks to talented chefs and self-promoters, which is a good thing, like Matt McAllister at FT33 and social media. I mean, it's really changed, communication lines between people who eat in New York and L.A. and Las Vegas. And it has, you know, put Dallas on the map. It's been a real battle. I mean, I've been charting the scene here for almost 17 years, and it's been a really slowly progressing town as far as innovation. And in the last 4 or 5 years, it has really taken off. And that's why I waited a couple of those in the front, the top end, in the top 10, a little bit higher than I probably would have, because I don't eat there a lot, mm-hmm. but I think that I, you know, there's a kind of a unweighable tangent here, which is that they're important to the city right now, and mm-hmm. that that to me is important as well, to support those.
Is there there's not a steak place traditionally in the top 10? There's one barbecue restaurant, right? That's Pecan Lodge.
That's right. Pecan Lodge is number 9. My first steak place is Al Bernays, mm-hmm. at 21. And my reasoning for that is simply that there's so many good steakhouses in Dallas that and Al Bernays does a great job, and he's always there, which is really important, and it's nice to be recognized. But I just felt that there were other restaurants that needed to be separated from, you know, the quality of a steakhouse and shine on their own, and that everybody knows they're going to get a good steak at all these restaurants, whereas some of these other little places down at the end, people have never even heard of them or gone to them. So
yeah, I would think for some, you know, nobody wants to, I guess, be on the lower end even of an awesome list, but that's got to be an exciting highlight for places that might be more neighborhood, that mm-hmm. aren't necessarily instantly recognizable, like maybe the top 20 in the list.
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because we threw an event when the magazine came out over at Trinity Groves, and we invited all 100 restaurants to attend, and complimentary. And we had almost 70 restaurants show up. Hmm. And I don't know if there's ever been a time when that many restaurants were in one place. And I was in disguise and had my face full of, you know,
You dressed in a pig costume. For people who don't remember the story,
right,
or haven't heard it.
I had whipped cream in my face. But I'll tell you, the main people that I spoke with that night were not the people in the top 20 or even the top 50. But the bottom end, all those, I mean, not all of them, but I can name at least 12 restaurants that came up to me that have never been invited to anything like that and stood in the same room with some of these high-end chefs. And it was really rewarding and fun to see them enjoying, you know, their spotlight, their place in the spotlight. And I've heard from a couple of them, and they've got bumps in business. So that's always nice to hear.
All right, so let's talk about some more in the top 10. Number two is Rosewood Mansion on Turtle Creek, mm-hmm. which has obviously been, you know, on lots of people's lists for years and years. Mm-hmm. You feel like it still belongs there.
Oh, yes. I mean, I didn't a few years ago. I mean, all restaurants, particularly hotel restaurants, will go through phases with chefs and ownership, and the Rosewood Mansion has been sold, of course, which is a really scary thing because you never know what's going to happen. But the chef there, Bruno Davion, has been here for probably four or five years. And he has managed to just really bring back glamorous dining, approachable, glamorous dining, French, you know, techniques through and through, but has a Texas accent, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, he uses herbs from the garden that they grow out back of the mansion. I mean, you know, 15 years ago, if you would have said that the mansion was going to be, no, they sent people for that, you know.
Right.
You know, they had people to do that. But it's the one of the most popular places to celebrate a birthday or an anniversary in town, and it's well worth the money.
And number three is Taeyeon, which is really interesting that there's a Japanese restaurant in the top 10.
Well, there's no other restaurant like that in Dallas, maybe not even in Texas. It believe me, 2, 3, 4, and 5 was a real hard call.
So they could have all been right there.
Mm-hmm. But I just thought that what's going on at Taeyeon deserved to be there because what Teach is doing there, they're not doing anyplace else.
And it's what elevates it?
Uniquely a Dallas. Well, he makes, of course, the whole restaurant was built around the soba noodles, which mm-hmm. he makes there. But it's fascinating process. He went to school in Japan for a month to learn how to make these noodles, which apparently is a shortcut. You know? And he has, you know, sort of exotic things for people that are willing to experiment. But then for the regulars, he orders all kinds of stuff that, you know, you won't even see on the menu. So he has a very loyal, adventurous pack of people that go there to sample, like, these incredible delicacies.
Number four is Oak.
Mm-hmm. Oak, well, it's interesting. Somebody sent me a message the other day. The chef at Oak, Jason Maddy, left the restaurant probably 2 days after this came out. And somebody said, well, is Oak going to, you know, relinquish their spot now that they don't have the chef there? That remains to be seen because, you know, I will have to go back and revisit it. But it was the rise of Oak. And Jason Maddy, as the chef there, was pretty miraculous. The owners, Tiffany and Richard Ellman, are first-time restaurateurs. And they hired the chef, sous chef from the mansion. And a year later, they're, you know, winning all these national awards. And I just think it's a compelling story. And it started a nice revolution here in Dallas.
Nancy Nichols is with us. She is dining critic for D Magazine. Her cover story, The 100 Best Restaurants in Dallas, appears on the issue that's in newsstands now, or in the issue that's on newsstands now. If you want to be part of this conversation, call us. The number is 1-800-933-5372. Our email address is think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in global studies, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Nancy Nichols. She is dining critic for D Magazine, and she has the cover story in the magazine this month. It's the 100 Best Restaurants in Dallas. If you want to be part of the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Of course, half our audience comes from Tarrant County. I want to make sure that we do talk a little bit about on page 53, the best restaurants in Fort Worth. I recognize that the article was not about that, but you do have a few places there that you really recommend.
I know, and I'm sorry, Fort Worth, but Dallas has gotten so big that it's really difficult, you know, for one critic to cover two cities.
Yeah.
It's hard enough for me to do one, and I'm not making excuses because I do get over there from time to time. And I just wanted to mention that we did this the very same thing in 1990, and there were some Fort Worth places in there because then, you know, really good restaurants were
few and far between.
Mm-hmm. Right. But, you know, obviously Tim Love, John Bunnell, I mean, they've got some real talent in Fort Worth. And I just said to somebody this morning that I would like to take a week off and go to Fort Worth and spend a week there eating and checking out the whole scene, because it's a cool town, and mm-hmm. they're doing some cool stuff. And Tim Love, of course, is leading the pack. But, you know, like Grace with Blaine Stanford, I mean, they're doing a great job. And that Nona Tata has been around forever. Mm-hmm. And
is that the little tiny sort of shoebox size place?
Yeah,
yeah,
right.
It's great.
And Ellerby's Fine Foods. I mean, that's just that really special place. And so, you know, Fort Worth, you know, you've got your own magazine and newspaper. You know, we'll note you, but we can't afford you.
All right. Number five on your list of top 100 is FT33. Maybe we should have gone in the other order, but I just want to make sure.
Well,
we're
already
to these.
Halfway there, yeah. So it doesn't matter.
FT33.
Well, FT33, like I said, it's really a dynamic I call it a youthful, spontaneous restaurant. Mm-hmm. I mean, the chef, Matt McAllister, is really a talented guy. And his wife, Iris, is really good at Facebook. And
that's becoming a much bigger deal.
Oh, no, it's huge.
Now, are restaurants typically hiring people, or are they doing it in-house, their Facebook presence and social media?
I have
presence?
No idea. Mm-hmm. But I think it's, you know, sort of half and half. But the McAllisters do it themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's really, they have built a huge following by letting so much of their personal life and their restaurant life just be, you know, like almost like a reality show on Facebook, if you follow them on Facebook. And I just, it's captivating to see how they have just, you know, grown this restaurant. Of course, they have a publicist in LA too, but really that's very, very little of what has been their success, because, you know, he's doing some really creative, you know, sort of, you know, on the edge of that modernist, you know, with the dust and the, his presentations are spectacular. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy was an artist and it shows. And sometimes that food like that can look gimmicky, mm-hmm. but he makes it look beautiful. And I mean, it's really stunning.
I have to say the photography in this issue is really beautiful too.
Oh, thank you. That's Kevin Marple. He does all of our food photography.
All right. So tell me about Spoon. I think a lot of people love the restaurant. Of course, chef there has not always had, am I correct, a great relationship with D Magazine? Was he the most hated chef at one point?
He was the most hated chef in Dallas, not the most hated
not by
chef
the magazine.
At D Magazine.
Okay, all right.
But John Teaser's had his ups and downs, as we all have. And I think John feels that he wasn't higher on the list because he serves just seafood, but that's not the case. I would say I tacked a little bit of probationary time on maybe on his ranking here, simply because he's brilliant, mm-hmm. chef. He's made some, you know, bad decisions in the past, and he's just got to prove himself that he can stay in the kitchen and do it. And at the time that this went to press, he had not been open very long. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to, you know, he you just kind of have to take all those little things into consideration. There are some other restaurants that are not on here. People have asked me about, like Lark on the Park. They weren't included because they were not open. I mean, we have such – our deadlines are 2 months out.
Yeah.
And this list had to be done like in January or early February so that we could get art assignments out. So really when you back up, you know, what my timeline was Christmas.
Mm-hmm. The top 100 of 2012 is what we're looking at here.
So you know, behind the scenes – these were some of the guidelines that I had to go on. So a lot of these restaurants were, you know, either had chef changes, yeah, like Marquee Village.
And, it's sort of a fast-moving world in restaurants, right?
Well, I mean, right now it is. I call it whack-a-mole chefs. It's like they pop up here and then they're over here. And by the time you get them in the magazine, they're off someplace else.
Okay, Fearings is number 7.
Fearings is number 7, and I'll be honest with you, there are 2 or 3 restaurants in here that I had to go back and visit a couple of times because I had hadn't been there in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I had originally had Fearings way up higher in the still in the top 20, obviously. And I went back and I was really blown away by how hands-on, you know, Dean Fearings still is, and how intricate the menu really is. It's not just steaks. I mean, he's got little sides of, you know, little touches, little things that he does, that the kitchen does, that make for a really interesting menu. And it's great people watching. And the quality of our food was really spectacular. And it was, so he got moved up.
All right, we're going to talk about more on the list. I do want to make sure we get a chance to go to the phones. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. You can also email think@kera.org. Let's speak with Colin in Dallas. Hey, Colin.
Hey, how's it going today? Long time listener, first time caller.
Welcome.
I just wanted to get the guests' insight on how design played into the list here. My wife was the lead designer for Oak, and I know it's gotten a lot of rewards and stuff for its design, and just wanted to get some insight from a critic as to how that impacted the decisions.
Well, thanks for your call.
Well, ambiance is always, you know, one of the, you know, boxes that I tick wherever I go.
Mm-hmm.
And Oak is a beautiful restaurant, and I think that is part of the allure, is that it is, you know, a stunning place with stunning food, and yet you still feel comfortable. It does. It obviously does. But at the same time, you know, sitting on the hood of a car at Meshack's Barbecue in Garland, to me,
it
is
works.
Ambiance,
mm-hmm,
too. Just as equally.
Next on the phone, we have Greg in Irving. Hi, Greg.
Hi. I think I must be channeling your guest today on her picks. I came to Dallas in 72 as an impoverished student with wealthy friends.
Hmm.
And so places like Prince Room and the Mansion were there. One place that I haven't been to in years and years and years, and I heard terrible things that happened to Warsaw. And I was wondering if you're
Did you say the old Warsaw? You're breaking up a little bit, Greg.
Yes, the old Warsaw. And I was wondering if your guests had any comments on what is the current state of that, at least once great restaurant, and whether it's fallen on bad times or not.
Let's get the word.
Well, I don't know if it's fallen on bad times. I think it has just been replaced by better restaurants. I think it's a restaurant that's, just to be blunt, is kind of stuck in the past, and it haven't changed with the times. But I think they appeal to a certain crowd. I think they work the concierge, you know, out-of-towner visitors to Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Channels
sort of right there next
really
to big,
well.
Fancy hotels.
And so I think they do okay, but I certainly don't hear much about it. I mean, the last time I went there for nostalgia reasons, I was pretty disappointed.
So Stephen Pyle's restaurant is on the list. He's actually got a couple of entries in the top 100.
Yeah, I think he's got at least three, mm-hmm, if not four. I mean, Stephen is pretty much quintessential Dallas in Texas, fifth generation,
yeah,
Texan, and you know, just I really thought with this last with Stephen Piles, the restaurant, that that was going to kind of be it for Stephen because he's been doing this for so long. It's the hardest business in the world. I mean, it's really difficult, especially at this level. And then he went on to do some R and consulting on stuff and saying, I mean, the guy's unbelievable. And then he opens up Stampede 66 and, you know, hits another one out, you know. So he's another one that has, you know, the finger on the pulse of, you know, what people here like. And his locations, of course, are not just downtown friendly, but also out of town friendly as well. And the restaurant, talking about ambiance, the ambiance at Stephen Piles is just stunning.
Mm-hmm.
The light changes every 45 minutes to mimic a Texas sunset. And I mean, subliminally, you just can't help but feel happy, and everybody looks pretty in that light.
That's always a great.
It's a great thing.
Okay, so Pecan Lodge is number 9. We just did a barbecue show actually a couple of weeks ago, and so this is the talk of the town, literally.
Well, these guys are the talk of the town, and actually they finally just relented and decided to open on Wednesday. So now they're open Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and I think Sunday too. So I mean, people are waiting in line for an hour and a half, and barbecues is hot, but. You know, I remember going to these guys when they first opened. They actually have some of the best fried chicken in town, too.
Oh, good to know.
But they've just got away with the wood and their smoker, and they're really good people. And again, social media, they're very savvy with social media, and it's been an interesting little story. I mean, I can't believe they're still there. I mean, I would think that they would branch out and go big time, but they're
in the farmer's market, right?
So on Shed 2, there's you're sitting on folding chairs, and you know, kids are running around all over the place. I mean, it's a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's a commitment.
Rounding out the top 10 is Lucia, which still is like impossible to get a table.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, they have 42 seats, which, you know, and they're only open for dinner 5 nights a week. So, but still, it's pretty amazing that they managed to do that. And Jennifer and David Uger, the owners, she's in charge of the wine, he's in charge of the food. And how they have a marriage and a restaurant, I'll never understand, because that just seems like the hardest thing in the world to do. But it's still packed. And he's a really creative, hardworking, innovative chef.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Let's go to Jason in Dallas. Hi, Jason.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
I just had a comment about someone else's comment and your comment on that about the old Orstoff. I had actually just gone there this past weekend, and the decor, as you said, very out of date. But I really thought the food was a lot better than I would have expected. I honestly would have thought that the food would have been just as out of date, but it really wasn't, and it was a really good value, I thought.
Well,
and then your comment right after that about Stephen Piles, I've been going to a lot of his restaurants, and a little part of me feels like he just keeps opening more and more. Got the one in San Antonio and the one in the airport, which confuses me. And I'm afraid he's going to stretch himself a little thin.
What do you think, Nancy?
Well, I think on the restaurant in San Antonio and maybe the restaurant at the airport, I think he's a consultant, not a hands-on owner. I'm not quite sure of that. But, you know, a lot of restaurateurs at Stephen's level and like Kent Rathbun, even Sharon Hage, who doesn't have a restaurant now, you know, have to pay the bills too. And you can make a lot of money in consulting. So sometimes they put their names, lend their names to businesses. So that might be the case there.
So number 11, you have The Grape, which has been in Dallas for 40 years.
Yes.
And still works.
The Grape, I go back to the original owner, Kathy McDaniel. She was a good friend of mine and still is. And I've loved it forever, and I still do. I love Brian Lusher. I'll say it right now because I think he is a good person. I think he is devoted, hardworking. The staff is always on top of their game, and he's constantly innovating things, but still sticking to some of the traditions that brought them, you know, their fame and glory. I mean, the mushroom soup, I think, is they're on their third generation of one family that's been making it since the restaurant opened 40 something years ago. So that's there's not very many restaurants that can say that.
Yeah, it's interesting, especially when you think about everything being new and different, and that's sort of what we tend to crave here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, he's kept the traditional, but then added like a brunch, mm-hmm. and now he's making his own hot dogs, these post-oak red hots or something like that. And, you know, he's doing his own charcuterie like David Uygur. I mean, a lot of these chefs now are not just buying their products, they're buying whole fish and filleting them, or they're making their own charcuterie instead of, you know, getting it from an import company, and that's to be applauded. I mean, it's an invigorating trend.
Nancy Nichols is with us. She's dining critic for D Magazine, and she's got the cover story this month. It's the 100 best restaurants in Dallas. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in global studies, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Nancy Nichols, who is dining critic for D Magazine and author of its cover story this month, The 100 Best Restaurants in Dallas. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Nana is number 12. I'm not trying to skip over anybody. It's a restaurant that everybody loves.
Sure.
Driftwood, I was happy to see on there because I've actually eaten there, as
Yay.
Opposed to a lot of these fantastic places. And the things that you noted, the cauliflower with the butter, I've tried to duplicate it at home and can't do it. So I'll have to go back for no other reason than that.
You can never get a fryer hot enough at home. Mm-hmm. So you might as well just go out to eat it.
Did you give thought to like what part of town?
No.
No. I guess you just can't at some point.
You can't. Mm-hmm. You just can't. I mean, if you start putting things like that in there, then you're going to cut somebody for the wrong reasons. And so it's just, you know. And I live up north, so maybe a couple of the places that I go to up there got a little bit. I mean, it's my list. I live there. I'm more likely to go to Mughlai more 4 or 5 times a month than most people in downtown Dallas. But
I was happy to discover that, actually. I haven't been up there.
It's just delicious.
I was happy to see Calachanchi's on the list, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
which people may not have been. It's kind of tucked away if you haven't heard about it.
Right, right. Well, and that's what I mean, is that some of these places have been there for a long time and been doing the same thing for a long time and are still doing it. If not the same, better, mm-hmm. you know, it's not like the old Warsaw. They've progressed, and there and now, of course, with all the vegan and vegetarians, you know, that revival of that kind of lifestyle eating, you know, they're, you know, totally relevant again. I mean, you stick around long enough, you know, it's like me, you're relevant again.
You have in here a little list about like what's in and what's out, which I think is sort of tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
But you have, you know, carnivore is out, vegan is in, and Sonic Ice is out. Glacial Ice is in.
Yes.
Is this, are people still really doing this? They're going up and taking blocks off glaciers.
Yes.
And this makes like a much better cocktail. Is that the thing?
Well, I'll tell you.
It sounds so awful.
I think there's, well, it's not. A couple of years ago, I went to Alaska and I was on one of those little Zodiac boats, and I went up to right to the edge of a calving glacier, and we collected glacial ice and we had it with us for the rest of the trip. And every night we would make drinks with it and we let it melt and we drank the water, and it was fascinating because you're drinking, you know, 4 million old water.
Yeah.
And it has a completely different taste. I mean, it's like, it really is different. I mean, I'm an ice snob, and, you know, so I make spherical ice and square ice. And
depending on the beverage and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and Michael Martinson, who's at Cedar Social, and they now have a new place over on Travis Walk called Smith, which is a bar, or not a bar, cocktail den, excuse me. I think they're still importing glacial ice and making drinks out of it. So,
well, maybe I'll have to try it and see.
Hats off to them.
Makes a difference.
It's awesome.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Jack in Dallas. Hey, Jack.
Hello.
Hi. Go right ahead, please.
Hi. My question is, there's a lot of places, well, several places in Dallas that do steak and chops, steak and seafood, you know, along those lines very well. And I was wondering how you differentiate between them and then consequently rank them. I know, like, Albanese was on your list. There's a restaurant that's sort of new in town called Eddie V's that I happen to like quite a bit, and I was wondering what she thought about that.
Well, as Nancy mentioned earlier, they're not on the list because they didn't originate in Dallas.
That's
Eddie
correct. Mm-hmm. Right. And as I said, you know, Eddie V's has made other best lists, but for this list, there are restaurants that were initiated in Dallas.
Yeah. Best Chinese food restaurant in Dallas?
Well, I like Yao Fuzi because in Plano.
Or the greater Dallas area.
The greater Dallas area, exactly. Because it's kind of fine. And I have to say, this was really hard because I love Royal China.
Mm-hmm.
I go there a lot. I go there every Christmas Eve. So it's always a toss. But at Yao Fuzi, they have a really nice wine list. They're educated about wine and pairing it with food, which I just think bumps it up a notch. They have a menu that's in Chinese for Chinese people that come in, and that's always a great sign in an ethnic restaurant when you know there's menus in several languages, and I've ordered off that menu just by pointing and been just kind of blown away. So
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We'll go next to Richard in Arlington. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I was at Preston Center the other day, and they had Spoon is right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in and you know, was looking at the menu, and they had a $200 per person tasting menu. And, you know, there's a Black Eyed Pea right next door. So I was just curious, like, what do you get for $200?
Well, a tasting menu is, you know, it's a work of art. It's and generally, and I would say a $200 tasting menu by John Tesar, you're going to get more than a $200 worth of product and labor within that tasting menu. And it doesn't matter what's next door to it. I mean, just think about New York City. Some of the restaurants that are, you know, you got a KFC next door to, you know, some of these fine restaurants, and I don't think that's relevant. But if you sit down to a tasting menu, you know you're going to pay for it. I mean, $200 in New York and L.A. doesn't get you much as far as a tasting menu goes. So I think we should be lucky that the tasting menus in Dallas have remained relatively inexpensive compared to other places in the world.
Are more restaurants around here starting to add those to their menus or have special nights where they feature tasting menus, if not all the time?
I've actually seen it decline. Hmm. I could be wrong. I know that the French Room had tasting menus, and the Mansion offers them. But I was at Belly and Trumpet the last couple of months, and they're doing small plates, which really come out more like a tasting menu. So I think the small plate epidemic has kind of replaced the tasting menu because you can kind of pick and choose. When you do a formal tasting menu, you're at the chef's, control of the chef, what he has ordered for his tasting menu that day. And there's usually very few substitutions. And it's a wonderful way to learn a restaurant and a chef's talents, because they're certainly going to do the best that, they're going to do the best that they know how to do.
Do you have a favorite meal of the day? I mean, does it have to be dinner because that's when you do the bulk of your work, or like just for you as an individual?
I hate lunch.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I work. Mm-hmm. And it just, that's kind of my peak time. You know, I'm not a morning girl. Mm-hmm. So by the time I get revved up to go, I'll work all the way till 6 or 7. And then, so dinner is really my favorite meal.
That's when you come to life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a brunch person. I know a lot of people like brunch, but there's something about eating a big meal in the middle of the day that kind of slows up my metabolism. So, mm-hmm. But that's just me.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Let's go next on the phone to Rosemary in Bedford. Hi, Rosemary.
Oh, hi, and I'm calling to say thank you for triggering wonderful memories of the Grape Restaurant. I dated my husband. We went there back in the early 70s. I have a copy of the 10-year anniversary cookbook for the Grape, and the mushroom soup, the wonderful cheese boards.
Yes, I think a lot of people have been engaged, and I think a lot of children have been created after that mushroom soup,
After, but thankfully not during.
Not during. Well, I don't know. It was the 70s,
What about high concept in this area? Where would you, for people who really want the sort of most cutting edge dishes, where would you send them?
Well, again, FT33, mm-hmm. Spoon probably. Mm-hmm. Oak to a certain extent. Belly and Trumpet's not in here because they were not open, but I just found some really incredible cutting edge things going on over there. I think those are, there's a huge trend right now towards, finding these really bizarre ingredients and I had antelope heart tartare at Belly and Trumpet. It was just spectacular. And so finding things like that are going on in Dallas, it's really nice. And to see a full dining room and to find out that it's really selling is a nice thing. Because sometimes people put that stuff on their menu and it doesn't sell. Mm-hmm. So actually I talked with the chef and he said it's doing really well. So it's nice.
I forget what the highest ranking Mexican and Tex-Mex places are.
Well, I don't remember. I haven't read this, but I think it might have been Mr. Macero.
Mm-hmm. I think that's
just,
right.
Just as
that's
a nod to Mika Rodriguez, who I believe is, and Mia's. Mm-hmm. Mia's is on there because I think they've just sort of defined what the Dallas palate is for Tex-Mex. I was really sad to see Escondido is on this list, which is one of my... I go back to the 60s and 70s of eating at some of these places at Herrera's and Escondido, and they closed the day that this issue came out, which was really sad because it's 40 years in business and they're going to put up a parking lot, so it's very sad.
Okay, let me think. What else? We have about 3 minutes left here. Are there places that you want to make sure that we are, that we make a point of reading the reviews about, or that we pay attention to?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll give you one secret, not a secret. I did have some regrets.
I can't believe I forgot to ask this.
Well,
great.
And that's that, it goes along with doing this. It's something that you know, you get so close to it that you forget the obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that there are two restaurants that I feel should be on this list that are not on it. And I feel it should be Cedar Social and Whiskey Cake in Plano. And my apologies to them. It just, I don't know, you know, I don't know who I would take off, you know, to put them on there.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the problem with this, is that you get so close to it and you, I hate to make sports analogies, but I kind of play tennis with a backboard, you know, and it's really nice sometimes if somebody would just hit a shot back, you know, so that I could tell if what I'm doing is good or bad. But this was just all playing against the backboard. And I'm just being real honest about how the, you know, how it all went down. And so those, that, if I have regrets, those two are mine.
You mentioned Whiskey Cake. I actually haven't been there. But is there a best dessert restaurant on this list? Not something you named necessarily, but is there a place that you would send people who just love dessert?
Well, I'll tell you, the best dessert in town right now is at Spoon. And it's because they have instituted a real dessert as a course, and they have, it's like if you order dessert, you get like three or four different courses, and it's really fun. You can just go there for dessert, and you'll just get this really, it's a really a nice treat, and it's nice to see that. Now, if you don't want to go out and spend that kind of money, there are some restaurants that are, you know, and I bring up Whiskey Cake because the Whiskey Cake, a Whiskey Cake is good.
It sounds good.
I mean, everything they do there is made from, you know, scratch with local, you know, the whole nine yards. But this is just a really dense, sexy, bourbon-laden, creamy, delicious dessert. And I'm a coconut cream pie gal, and I've been known to go to Albernaise and just get it to go because they've got the best in town. So, desserts, I'll probably do best desserts at some point because there's pastry chefs need to shine a little bit more than this list shows.
Nancy Nichols is the dining critic for D Magazine. Her cover story for the June issue is called The 100 Best Restaurants in Dallas. Nancy, it's been such a pleasure to have you back. Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. We had production assistance from Lindsay Connect, and our podcast is produced by Christine McConnell. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. You can learn more about The Think Show and download our podcast free at kera.org/think. We welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions. Email those to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.